All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday. I never looked. December 19th. For today. We're doing this podcast today, December 19th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial with still time for NFL season, free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month after that. Includes NFL optimal lineups, NBA as well, member only chat, MLB when that season comes along, and base projections for hockey. You're all set to go. So dfsr.com/NBA will get you going over there. Go check that out. All right, buddy. Week 15. I'm getting confused because the teams have played 14 games, but this is week 15. Week 15 in the books. I had so many ways I wanted to start this podcast because I had so many like,
complaints, bad beat stories.
It's not even complaints. Some of the things are just kind of amazing. Since you said complaint, that's where I'm going to start. So
there we go.
If you knew at like, let's say 10 minutes after the start of the game that Jacksonville would put up 45 points on 3 rushing touchdowns and 3 passing touchdowns, and we had their number one running back and let's just call it the de facto number one wide receiver, because we also knew Marquise Lee got hurt. Right. At that point, and you said this is the outcome of the game, the final score is 45-7. There's no Marquise Lee. And this is the thing. How much X, like how many times X would you have just chosen to just double it? How many times X would you have said, this is what I'm willing to restake myself for the rest of this now that I know what my lineup looks like and what the end result of the game was?
Yeah, 10X or something. I mean, just knowing that you start off the day with such a huge edge that you'll never have, I would instantly have 10X'd bye-bye.
And this is the thing with football that can sometimes drive you totally crazy. So we play Chris Ivory, somewhat begrudgingly. You wanted to play him more. And I honestly, at the end of it, I didn't even care, because seeing what Jacksonville did, this is where I wanted to have a discussion of bad luck, bad process, right? Now, there's a lot we can do this on every guy and whatever. And I don't want to fall all the way down the chain here, because if you can't hear, we did not have a fantastic week in DFS. And I want to admit that when those things happen, because it's just honest. Like, I'm not a fan of the tout that just is willing to only say when it goes great and then is not willing to say when it goes poorly. We had a very, very bad week in DFS this week. So,
for football.
For football. Well, this is a football podcast, so I thought that was
right. Basketball, just because we are a one shop for all things, and basketball's been going well. Football, we took a beating this week.
Yeah. So with the Ivory thing, so when we look at, you know, you and I were texting, and we were kind of discussing, like, is this bad luck? Is it bad process? And I kind of, on the Jacksonville side, I kind of erred on the side of good process, terrible result. Like, and I know I'm an apologist and whatnot, but when we look at the end result of, and we say we have the guys that are stand to get this kind of opportunity in a game like this, where do you land on that? Bad luck, bad result. And let's just take this very case specific one. I mean, you could go in every case, and there's just tons of crazy examples from this week. And just, you can take examples from an entire year if you just play enough lineups, and that includes anybody, not just us. But where do you kind of land on this Jacksonville thing? Because in the end, I think it was the right thing to do, and it just couldn't have run worse in terms of like who got there for the outsized opportunity.
Yeah, I think you've pretty much summed up my feelings on it. Like, so there's a lot going on here, right? I think we'll break down Ivory and Westbrook a little bit differently from one another. So Ivory, I think if we just even knew that he was going to get 17 carries before the game at a sub $5,000 price tag, we would have instantly played him. So that one I have no issues with whatsoever. And we knew Jacksonville's plan was going to be to run the ball if they got up. The issue wound up being that they just randomly got up by so much that even their backup guys that are now their starters wound up getting a breather in the second half. So you had guys like Corey Grant go from 0 rushes to 10 rushes, right? Like, that's not the type of thing that anyone can expect in anything other than a blowout game. Westbrook, who had been sort of that wide receiver too, filling in for Lee, he winds up being bad in the first half, but barely seeing the field in the second half, as guys like Keelan Cole and Jaden Mickens wind up getting all the targets and receptions. So I just don't, I think if no one can predict, including Las Vegas, a 45-7 outcome here, I think if it's something like 25-7, all these guys get there in spades. So I can't get worried about 40-point blowouts in football, because they're not predictable and they never happen. So
Ivory,
especially when you're missing your two best skill position players, like, just not worried about it.
Ivory was one of those guys too. It's like, this is where football is just a complete game of inches. Ivory had 3 goal line carries that he was stopped on, and then 2 of them went to Tommy Bohannon, who had not scored I don't think he had a carry all year before those 2 touchdowns. So it was a little bit tilting to kind of watch that unfold and to say we had the right idea, I think, and then just the game script. Now, the other one I want to bring up, and I'm wondering, are your thoughts about this one, is Russell Wilson. So Russell Wilson's another guy that we were high on. And I'm not taking the exact same tact here. I expected Wilson's ownership to be higher this week. It wasn't. He was awful. It was hard to tell watching the game if it was a Wilson thing or just a team thing.
There was weather concerns going into the game.
Well, the weather didn't seem to bother the Rams. The Rams had no problem with the weather. So I'm not sure where we land on this, because Wilson, I mean, had been a kind of a fantasy darling this season, was the highest overall fantasy quarterback in terms of points scored left. I mean, now that Watson and Wentz, if those guys had played out the season, I don't think Wilson would be here. But he'd probably be over Wentz, but probably not over Watson. So where do we land on Wilson? Good process, bad result. Other way, like bad process. Like, he had played poorly against the Rams the previous time they had met. There were some weather concerns. Seattle's offense is completely dependent on him, but we've seen them struggle in some other areas. Where do you land on the overall in our process to get there on Wilson?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to zoom back in on Wilson and try to compare him, because I was listening to the podcast from last week and mostly hearing things we said about Cam, which I think we evaluated the situation generally correctly, and that he wound up being a good big tournament play. And his line still speaks to his relative riskiness. But in a lot of ways, Wilson looks, if you look at the game logs, he's just like a slightly rich man's version of Cam in the passing game and a slightly poor man's version of Cam in the running game. So it's like, which one do you really want? And, you know, Wilson's tendency to pass a little bit more has given him something of a higher floor and more consistency over the course of the season. But the reality with Wilson is that he's very touchdown dependent. And, you know, it doesn't really seem that way until you stop scoring the touchdowns, you know, like he went from passing for 3 touchdowns a week and sometimes, you know, running for one to chip in there as well, to going just down to 1 touchdown a week. You're just going to get burned sometimes. So it happened to be his lowest total passing yards on the season. I don't think that was necessarily predictable. He wound up going for his second lowest total passing touchdowns on the season with just 1, and had no rushing touchdowns and a relatively poor rushing performance. So I think it was something of a perfect storm, one of those game scripts that get away from you. And I think, especially with the weather concerns, whether that made a difference or not, probably a spot where we could have gotten away just to, you know, steer towards, you know, more safety of a higher owned player. So,
and that was Cam. I mean, Cam was the higher owned player of those two guys. And I think that's where I'm not sure if it was the weather concerns that ultimately ducked people out, or it was the pricing. We had talked about Cam being, especially on DraftKings, the value you got off of pivoting down to him really kind of did make a difference. It was a harder case to make on FanDuel, and you and I talked about that. And then Cam obviously goes out there. And honestly, Wilson was lucky. I mean, just to go the other way, I know I said Ivory was unlucky on the touchdown. Wilson was lucky to get his last touchdown, because he shouldn't even been playing. If Seattle had any brain, they should have just benched him. That game was completely over by the time he threw his first touchdown pass of the game. And they were only at that point. The fact that the way that he was running for his life the entire game, he was such an injury risk in a game that was completely lost, just so ill-advised to have him still playing. So even his line actually honestly should have looked worse. Like, he should not even been in the game for the drive that produced the last touchdown. A couple other things. I want to go a couple. Do we believe it or not believe it, guys, going forward into these last 2 weeks? So I'm going to throw these guys out to you, and you can tell me, based on their week 15 performance, whether or not we believe that, like, we believe this is the case for them going forward. Some are one-offs and some are some are just kind of season-long guys that we struggle with.
Excited about
the first one's Nick Foles. Nick Foles ends up as the 4th overall fantasy quarterback on the week, throws 38 passes, not all that accurate, 63%. The Giants' defense is pretty bad, so we need to take that into account, I think. Only 237 yards, but sort of in like the Carson Wentz line, also just scores a ton of touchdowns. Like, I feel like Wentz did this a lot of times too, where he just didn't produce all that many yards, didn't produce all that many yards relative to how many touchdowns he threw. Is Nick Foles, definitely wanted to take a wait and see approach on Foles going into this week, simply because there's no reason to stick your neck out, I don't think, on a backup quarterback. But where do we land after this performance this week for Foles going forward in the Eagle offense?
Yeah, I mean, we looked at this actually, and you know, on the, I think it was the Cash Game podcast, it was a Game by Game Breakdown podcast on Friday. I made a pretty good case, I think, for playing Foles in cash, just because he is cheap, just because there is a track record there, just because he was reasonable when he filled in. So I think Foles was a good play last week. You know, he was fairly highly owned in cash games too, so I don't think he really snuck up on anyone necessarily there. $7,300 now, that's a significant price increase, going up from $6,000 to $7,300, and he'll be up against Oakland this week, which is another good matchup. It's not in the main slate, unfortunately, so a lot of people won't get to cash in on this. But It winds up becoming a little bit dicey after that. Like, he's going to go into week 17. You know, the Eagles are already talking about resting their starters potentially if they clinch a playoff berth on the weekend here. So I think it might be one of those cases where Foles is a good play, but it's a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it sort of thing. Like, sure, play him on the Monday slate if you decide to play that this week. There's two games on Monday. And then week 17, it's anybody's guess with whatever the Eagles decide to do.
I didn't realize that he wasn't on the main slate. I would have asked the question. Don't worry, buddy. I would have asked the question either way. But I was
a little worried, but I think we leave it in. I think we just move on.
The other guy is Kareem Hunt. So the last 2 weeks for Kareem Hunt, yeah, after a middle season where he just took a little Rumspringa just to kind of did his own thing and just kind of walked off and said, I'm going to do my own thing and maybe I'll come back into the fold and maybe I won't. He decides to come back, as all good Rumspringa people do, comes back into the fold, and over the last 2 weeks has carried the ball 49 times for 271 yards and two touchdowns and been featured a lot in the passing game, has 12 targets over that time. This week they walk in and play Miami. I feel like I've been down this Kareem Hunt road before.
Familiar, I'll be honest.
Like, I just don't know. I don't know what to make of him. At the one hand, I'm trying to say this is a real thing because this was the plan all along. At the other time, I can't help but look at the middle of the season. Where do we stand on Kareem Hunt?
I say we play him just because it'll be difficult to be on the wrong side of any player every single week for a whole season. And I feel like we just have to go. I'd rather go in this direction, you know, to at least be there to text each other about how he scores 5 fantasy points than I have to watch him score 37 or whatever like he did last week. So, yeah, I say we play him, man. I'm ready. I'm back in.
Well, I did actually play him last week. Because we played, he was in our like the Saturday only lineups, thank goodness, and the Thursday Saturday lineup. So had some Kareem Hunt exposure. It was actually funny just the way it worked out too this week, because when I say the DFS was bad for us this week, the main slate was very bad.
The other smaller slates.
The smaller slates weren't as bad. So okay, so we're thinking we're on the Kareem Hunt train, just simply on an emotional hedge. Then
yeah, I'm absolutely ready. It's kind of how like this season you've started to play. Like, so when we go into Sundays, there's obviously like a bunch of different candidate guys with how close football is that could be in our lineup. And you've recently taken to any guy who we talk about but doesn't make it in the optimal lineup. You have to play in big tournaments, and I think I'm kind of building off your success with that and saying I'm just going to play Kareem Hunt because
that list was
personally put on earth to ruin my NFL season.
That list was pretty long this week. I mean, I made a list. It was Nelson Aguilar touchdown.
It must have been pretty
Latavius Murray. It was just all still paired with guys like Russ, so it kind of didn't matter. It was Latavius Murray touchdown, Jarvis Landry 10 catches. So the list goes on and on about guys that we just didn't feel all that comfortable going in. Another guy going the opposite way is a guy like AJ Green. So AJ Green, didn't mind him going into this week, and his price point is now DraftKings. Switch around prices based on matchup. So you sometimes can get like a double dip on a player who is maybe going to see opportunity, but also maybe isn't in a great matchup. Or excuse me, not a double dip, but maybe like at sometimes one outweighs the other. AJ Green has seen a dip in targets. He's also seen a dip in price. The quarterback play from Dalton looked terrible this week. Are we completely off of AJ Green going forward, who had been sort of like creeping around the wide receiver one category at times this season?
Yeah, I mean, he's another one. He's just been sort of up and down, and it's been really hard to figure out which AJ Green's going to show up in any given week. He went from 16 and 12 targets against Pittsburgh and Chicago to 4 targets against Minnesota. So, I mean, I think if you know that that's part of his repertoire, and, you know, it was the second lowest on the course of the season, so I don't know that it was totally predictable. But if you know that's part of his repertoire, that probably excludes him from being an around $8,000 wide receiver. You know, like the best wide receivers just don't have weeks like that. Although, you know, Julio Jones had another one this week too, so maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe the key to NFL is actually just trying to not to figure out who's consistent, but figure out when the players are going to be good and when they're going to be terrible. And I'm serious about that. Like, you know, the people who played Julio Jones against Tampa Bay got paid off in spades. Everyone who played him since has been miserable. AJ Green has weeks like that too. So I think there's a couple classes, and we haven't even talked about injury news yet, but Antonio Brown, rest in peace for this season. He might have been the only receiver when we look back on this season that was the consistent guy until, of course, he screwed us by getting hurt. So.
Well, real quick, and I'm going to move on to some of the injury stuff. But Julio Jones, I suspect a large piece of the fantasy community got bailed out this week by not having Julio Jones in the main slate because he played Tampa Bay again here.
253 yards and 2 touchdowns, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't even want to imagine what his ownership rate would have been on the main slate here. It would have been a real question between like Antonio Brown.
We probably would have played him, yeah.
Interesting. Right. So he goes, right. He goes for a 15 for 253 and then last night, 8 for 54. Yeah. So let's get into some of the injuries and talk about what this is going to mean going forward. So obviously the big one is Antonio Brown. Feel like if you watch the injury, it feels like he got lucky. I thought he had broken his leg. The fact that it was only like a calf tear, I think is the ultimate diagnosis. The fact that it's only a tear and that he could be back for the playoffs feels like an epic win for the Steelers, because if you watched it, it really looked like, I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, I think he broke his leg.
Well, shout out to my brother Chris here. I was talking to him on the phone when that injury happened, and right away he said, that looks like a hamstring or a calf. So that's pretty nuts. But
good for him. Yeah, he's more of an athlete. Well, Chris is always more of an athlete.
He's like the athletic one in the family for sure.
So. Yeah, and I count myself as part of your family. So I'm going to say he's the athletic one of them. Chris, then me. Chris, then me, then you, then Kyle.
Big gap, then Kyle. Yeah, that's pretty much
for us four brothers. Okay. So what do we do?
Poor guy, you never had a brother. It's really sad.
What do we do with the Steelers going forward here? They're another one that aren't on the main slate, but it's going to warrant consideration here for the next 2 weeks. Although week 17 always gets a little weird, but it's just football independent here. Yeah. What do you think what happens with the Steelers here without Brown? Do we just see tons of Juju? Do we see tons of Martavis Bryant? Is it just even more Le'Veon Bell? Everyone was on Le'Veon Bell, so I can't really pat myself on the back of that one. Where do we stand with the Steelers?
Yeah, I think it's probably Bell gets the majority of it, and then it's a split between Martavis and Juju. I think Martavis is a little bit expensive on FanDuel this week. Schuster is kind of interesting for me because he had, he's got a little of that possession receiver in him, and Antonio Brown is just so important to moving the chains. And I think Martavis Bryant has never really shown an ability to do that. I mean, he's never really been given the opportunity, to be fair, just because they've always had Antonio Brown. But my gut tells me that Schuster is the guy that fills in that role a little bit more. And he's very, very effective on a per target basis. He's pretty good after the catch too. So I think he'll be an interesting discussion at 7,000, which is admittedly expensive, but for a team that loves to pass, it seems like he'd have a tough time not getting 8 or 9 targets this game.
Other maybe relevant but less relevant, and almost any player that gets hurt is going to be less relevant than Antonio Brown, but some other guys, we have some question marks going in to this week. Well, excuse me, these aren't question marks. Marquise Lee is the aforementioned one, is going to not play until at least the playoffs. I'm pretty sure Jacksonville got in this week. But where do we stand? Jaden Mickey came out completely out of nowhere. This guy had not caught a pass in the last 5 weeks and had one of the best games of the season. Keelan Cole was very good this week. Where do we stand with Jacksonville? Do you think, or are they just too much of an unknown? Like, we don't know about Fournette. Ivory's got hurt.
Not because of the insane game script from last week, because I think had we seen a closer game, we could have had a much better idea of what they were hoping to do. But, Keelan Cole, 9 targets, that was just totally unprecedented. I mean, he had a decent run earlier in the season, but he also did effectively nothing with the receptions that he did get until last game. So maybe if you want to pencil him in at a $5,300 price tag, it's very, very reasonable. I would guess that at the very least, he's the wide receiver 2 on this team now, and that could be worth something at $5,300. This week, it's a pretty good matchup against San Francisco, so I can see people wanting to go there. My gut tells me, though, that D.D. Westbrook is probably still the guy. He was just so consistent up until last week that I really have to think that the game script played a role in the Jags kind of pulling him out. So, I think D.D. Westbrook's still top of the chain there, and then Keelan Cole, and I wouldn't play Mickey.
And then a couple other injury news notes. Rex Burkhead is going to sit out at least until the playoffs, it looks like. They've gone more with a running back by committee, but they have some other guys on the roster here. Deion Lewis seems like he'd be the RB1, but that's never really been the plan in New England.
He's expensive too. Like he had 15 touches last week, but it's 6,700. That's probably not enough.
It seems like they'll probably activate Gillisley just because they still have him around as an inactive. Does it move the chains at all for you on Deion Lewis not having Burkhead around? Do you think it's just kind of the Pats and it's too hard to trust what they're going to do with the running backs?
Yeah, people will do it. I mean, Burkhead was getting 10 to 15 touches per week, so that is a significant amount to shift around. But given that the Pats have had this institutional policy of spreading the ball around in the backfield, it's hard to believe they'll break that for Deion Lewis, who's never really profiled as an every down back. So, if Lewis were like 5,700, I think it'd be interesting. But at 6,700, that's just, actual running back prices, and I don't think you want to pay that.
And the last one is Aaron Rodgers. Some question about whether or not he's going to play this week. You mentioned that he took a lot of hits during the game this week, and then it just was unclear if it was even a good idea, if they're not going to make the playoffs, if it's a good idea to keep running him out there. If we were to see him not play, would we go back and just kind of just revert to what they have been doing just with Brett Hundley, like kind of Davante Adams might have gotten hurt too, but where would we stand here with the Packers?
Yeah, I mean, it would be Adams, I would think. I think that, you know, this is the time of year for football where the teams, for whatever reason, like agree that they don't have to play all the games. Like they can just stop, even though teams that were out of it in the middle of the season don't get to do that. So I'm not totally clear on what the etiquette is in terms of when teams can stop playing their actual players, given that the whole week is only 16 weeks long. This drives me completely nuts, by the way, in case you can't tell. But just like as a quick aside, not playing the last 2 weeks of the season, that's about 8.5%? I had this in my mind a second ago. 8.75%. It's 12.5%. There we go. This is me doing mental math podcast.
Boom.
At 12.5%, that would be like a baseball player just sitting the last 19 games of the season just in case, you know, like that's just so crazy to me. Like I don't understand how they can do that. But that being said, I don't know that at this point we can make any big guesses about the Packers until we get more news. And if Rodgers doesn't play, I think we go back in time. If he does play, then they might just be a stay away, because I think they're still a huge candidate to pull their guys if things are getting dicey at all.
All right, the last thing I'm going to give you, I'm going to give you a bunch of names here. You tell me what they all have in common. Ready?
Okay, ready.
Keelan Cole, Tavarius King, Jaden Mickens, Demir Bird, Cody Latimer. I'll throw Sterling Shepard in there too. What do those guys have in common?
More receptions than somebody we played last week.
I was just going to say, no, they were just like the 7 of the top 12 fantasy performances this week. I mean, 3 of these guys are players.
Eli Manning, your boy.
Sterling Shepard. Yeah. If some of these guys, I mean, if you need to be a pretty hardcore football fan to have heard of anybody, like Demir Bird is a guy that I could be honest with you, I had not really ever heard of before. So just from plain honesty, now he turned his 4 catches into 75 yards and 2 touchdowns. I wouldn't think that's going to repeat itself. But yeah, guys like Shepard and King, do we trust anything? I mean, well, King just had 2 touchdowns on 3 total catches.
But same with Mickey.
But Shepard had 16 targets. So Shepard's a guy that we've liked in the past. Shepard's a guy that we've thought was going to be a possession guy for the Giants, and it's gone sort of back and forth. Now he's had some injury concerns as well. Where do we stand on Sterling Shepard going in here? Because the 16 catches are completely elite. And he had a decent conversion rate too, 69% conversion rate with a touchdown. Where do we stand on Shepard going into week 15? Going into week 16?
Yeah, I think Shepard's a great play. I mean, we've liked him in the past. We kind of predicted not this level of performance, but we talked about him in the Game by Game podcast last week, pointing out that he was very ripe for a return to prominence now that Eli was back in the picture. So I think it's legit. I mean, he had a 13 and a 9 target week earlier with Eli. I think in good matchups, you're going to want to play him. You know, I think it's sub 7,000. He's very, very underpriced and is a pretty definitive wide receiver one.
He could draw Patrick Peterson, and I'm aware that I said Patrick Patterson in the last podcast because it got basketball when I overlap him in football and basketball. Too much, guys. When you're only a couple letters away from each other, it's going to be pretty easy to get those two names confused. But he could draw some more Peterson this week. That's pretty much all the notes I had. I probably cherry picked everything from you. But did anything else stand out to you from this past week in football?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, we talked about a lot of the injury stuff. Another thing to keep an eye on, though, is Kerwin Williams may not play this upcoming week. That just makes an already crazy Arizona running back situation a little bit nuttier. So I'm not exactly sure where people are going to wind up for that one, but just a situation to keep an eye on. Ezekiel Elliott returns for next week, so that's not exactly based on the weekend, but just another thing to keep in your calculations. I think he instantly steps in and becomes on that Le'Veon Bell level of, like, probably appropriately priced super stud that you can count on for huge production, especially given that he's had multiple bye weeks here. He can come step right back in.
Well, actually, pause on him real quick before we move on from him, because actually he was another guy that I wanted to talk about, and thanks for reminding me. But I wanted to bring up with Zeke. So now you mentioned the multiple rest, and I think everyone can admit that having multiple weeks of rest, whatever you want to call it, it was forced rest. The guy didn't want to rest, but if multiple weeks of rest in the middle of the season would help,
a little nap time, which time for your nap too.
Especially for running back, seems like it would help just about everybody. Now, the price has barely moved on him. He's only 8,300. Do you think also the narrative of just being pissed? Like, I almost never put this into anything, right? Like, I never, because I think it's mostly dumb. And so the fact that I'm even bringing it up here makes me feel like it could be like a real thing. But the combination of rest, plus he's pretty cheap, plus how they're already using him, plus just like the guy's just got to be fucking furious about just having had to sit out all these weeks. The Cowboys kind of like dusting out of, maybe possibly getting dusting out of the playoffs. Do you think that actually could be a factor for him this week?
No, I just don't think it matters. I mean, like how pissed do you need to be to make use of your 30 touches per game? Like the guy was getting the last 4 weeks that he played 30, 27, 34, 27 touches. Like, I just don't think at 8,300, like he can be as pissed or as not pissed or, you know, happy, serene. Like if he, with his talent, if he steps on the field for 27 touches a game, he's going to pay off an $8,300 price tag. So all of this to say, maybe it matters, maybe it doesn't. He's still just a great play. So I just wouldn't worry if like that, I wouldn't use that as a tiebreaker because I just think he's a good play.
Okay, let me rephrase about sort of where I was thinking about this. Again, it doesn't, I'm not going to change our projections no matter what. Do you think that more than anything makes him the highest owned running back on the week? Because you can talk yourself into Elliott almost in any sort of narrative, like matchup, just in terms of opportunity. And then in terms of just, if you are a person that just subscribes to the emotional levels of players and how they're going to perform versus like based on how they feel, do you think he ends up just becoming just the absolute chalk on FanDuel?
Yeah, I think the narrative makes it go from being like the highest owned guy to feeling like a must play, because everyone who looks at that is going to think everyone's going to play this guy because of this narrative thing. So I think, yeah, he'll be the highest owned running back, and it's probably correct. I mean, I think he's just a good play anyways. And if there's, you know, sometimes those narrative factors do matter. Like when Boogie Cousins goes in and puts up a 46-24 against Sacramento or whatever, like part of that is because he's a human being and does try harder in some games rather than others. Right. Right. So I tend to think it matters a little bit less in football just because they only play one game a week. So it's like, you know, if you're good at football, I tend to think you probably get up for the games and try your best in them. Whereas basketball is like that slow burn where part of being a good player means turning it on at some points and leaving it off for others just to maintain your energy over the course of the whole season. But yeah, for Elliott's case, it's just a great play. Maybe it's because he's mad. Maybe it's just because it's a great play in general. But you're going to see a lot of ownership on him.
All right. Anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, the only other guy I wanted to talk about before we ran, this isn't a performance thing, but just another guy who's been in and out of our system, is Keenan Allen. So Allen goes out there last week, doesn't have a phenomenal week, kind of back-to-back and not so great weeks. And now there's some back concerns with him. People expect him to be fine going forward. He's now a little bit cheaper than he was at his peak prices. How do we consider a guy like Allen who, you know, we were very excited about, he's got a pretty reasonable matchup with the Jets. Like I said, not super, super expensive. Are we looking at him like someone who we're just going to stay away from because of the back thing, or do we pencil him in for previous targets? What do you think there?
And I probably have to hear about what's going on during the course of the week, how much he practices. Like if he got in even a practice and a half, I would say, or something like that, because he's a guy probably at this point that doesn't need the practice to play. I wouldn't think. I'm not at this point. Yeah, and that's not, I'm not great all the time at judging about what some of these things mean, but my guess is a guy like Allen probably only needs to get in a practice, if that, to be able to be considered a full go. Now, if he got in a full practice, I feel much better that he was just completely healthy. And if that was the case, then I would feel fine with it. The line here is not as big as I expected. Only the Chargers, only -6.5. Now they're on the road, so that's pretty big for being a road team. But the Jets, I guess, Jets were able to hang a little bit last week, so maybe it's not totally crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a West Coast to East Coast thing, and there's weather. There's also opposite day weather going on from San Diego to New Jersey. So, yeah, I can see why the line wouldn't be too wide. But, yeah, I think Allen's probably just a stay away. There's probably just better options. But
well,
it's a case study, right?
It'll be interesting because with Antonio Brown gone, I mean, Antonio Brown was so much better than everybody else. And honestly, DeAndre Hopkins isn't on the main slate either. So, or is he? Actually, no, I take that back. We'll just have him lower. Maybe I just have a bad projection on him. Anyway, the wide receiver list, if you at first glance, at least on DraftKings, doesn't look like this list that you would feel all that great about. So the top, the most expensive wide receivers this week are Julio, is coming off a bad game. He's playing the Saints this week. Then we get Allen, and then you get Michael Thomas finally kind of coming around. And then you really fall off with Cooks, Fitzgerald, AJ Green, Devin Funchess, and Shepard. So I think from that perspective, sight unseen, I would feel more comfortable with Allen than any of the guys I just mentioned, I think.
Sure.
And it would be.
Yeah, I think the practice point's a good one in a case like this, because you know if he's out there practicing that they really have no concerns, because all too frequently NFL teams are willing to just sit a guy during practice if he's a guy of Allen's stature and kind of leave it in that, you know, we'll see come Sunday thing. But it'll be an interesting situation to monitor.
All right, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back again on Thursday talking some cash game plays, Friday doing a game by game breakdown. Go check out the free 3-day trial of our projection system at dfsr.com/NBA, and you're all good to go. Buddy, talk to you some more football on Thursday.
Be easy, playa.